leveraging internal talent got us over that hump of fighting everyone else in the market for contractors, having to open up FTE positions that would obviously extend and have a long-term expense as you carry that forward. So we've taken an opposite approach and really chosen to invest in our own team to overcome that hurdle.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with Oliver Galecki, the Associate Vice President of EHR Implementation at Memorial Hermann Healthcare Delivery System. Oliver, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Jordan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. So for our listeners, Memorial Hermann Health System is a 19-hospital, 4,300-bed health system headquartered in Houston, Texas. And today, I'd like to talk about the migration from Cerner to a single instance of Epic at Memorial Hermann Health System. Memorial Hermann migrated from five other regular scheduling systems as well, in addition to Cerner, to a single instance of Epic, and is replacing another 45 systems, including document imaging systems, a blood bank, a medical device integration vendor, and others. Oliver, I'd like to ask if you wouldn't mind speaking about some of your goals with this migration and any sort of complications and problems that your team has encountered over the course of this migration.
Absolutely. So I'll start, I think, just by setting the stage of where we are currently in the project. We are concluding what is known as Epic Build Wave Number 1. So we're early on in our configuration phase with the Epic implementation. So we certainly have lofty goals to achieve a lot of standardization across our system and elevate both our provider clinician experience in the clinical space, as well as our employee experience in our back office spaces, with that focus on our consumer experience as well. Some of what we're looking to achieve here really comes with being on a legacy system for a number of years, and not just specifically around the Cerner instance, but really several of our platforms have been with the Memorial Hermann system for quite some time. And so the opportunity to take a fresh look at our technology stack, bring in Epic and the best practice methodology that typically brings with it, is something that we're looking to really benefit from as an organization. I think what you hit on in terms of scheduling and registration platform standardization certainly is something that we see as a very achievable and desirable goal, and one of our guiding principles that we have to achieve in this. Additionally, with that, the opportunity to have the single billing office between our physician network as well as our hospital billing operations is another satisfier, both internally from being able to manage our operations as well as ultimately to the patient experience. And then I think everyone in the industry knows where MyChart stands in terms of a patient engagement, consumer experience platform. And so leveraging that with all of our other initiatives in that space is also a key platform that we plan to take advantage of.
Yeah, so I appreciate you giving us an overview of where you are, keeping in mind that you haven't yet concluded the migration to Epic. I know many of our listeners have either recently completed, are considering undergoing, or are like you in the midst of a migration to Epic. What are some of the complications or problems? And the reason I ask is because I think many of our listeners who may either be considering to going down this road or are currently in the midst of doing it may like to listen to some of your particular scenarios and potentially learn from some of the lessons that you have gleaned over the course of this migration.
Sure. I think one of the upfront challenges everyone has to figure out is the financing and how do you pay for Epic. And I think that's what any large capital investment, you have to go and do the research and due diligence behind that. One of the challenges we faced early on was really articulating the financial, was overcoming that perception that it is such a cost barrier to enter and to bring Epic up in such a large system at our scale. But ultimately, what we were able to do is go through a very thorough application rationalization process to really understand what do we spend across our IT infrastructure today? What does it look like if we host internally versus host at Epic? And start thinking about the realities. We wouldn't sit still and do nothing if we chose not to move to Epic. We would make other investments into other platforms moving forward. So that hurdle to clear, once you start telling the story of what all we will gain and what that really looks like over time, and putting it in perspective of other large capital initiatives that we do more routinely. So building a new tower, expanding OR suites, and where does this capital investment fall into that? We were able to overcome that through some of our due diligence process. I would say a second hurdle that everyone is probably focused on in today's world is staffing, and how do you find the amount of talent you need to staff your EPIC project. So with that, we really had several different approaches going into it. How would we do this? We assume we have a very strong tenured team at the Memorial Hermann Information Technology Department today. They've all, because of that tenure, had a lot of experience with our existing platforms. And so there was an honest pause to say, how do we bring everyone along on this journey and use the skills that they already have in the EPIC world? And so I think going in, our assumption was we'd have to go find contractors to fill the entire roster of the project, and then ultimately over time try to acquire that knowledge. What we were able to do, though, and ascertain as we went through that staffing process with EPIC, was we have a lot of the talent we need internally. And so leveraging internal talent got us over that hump of fighting everyone else in the market for contractors, having to open up FTE positions that would obviously extend and have a long-term expense as you carry that forward. So we've taken an opposite approach and really chosen to invest in our own team to overcome that hurdle.
Interesting. Staffing has actually been one of the greatest challenges facing large health systems in the United States. In fact, size doesn't matter. It's a big challenge regardless of where you are. I think the story of leveraging internal talent is an interesting one. Did you find that there was available? Did you have to kind of increase their hours, or did you de-staff them and deprioritize other projects? How did it affect the overall mission and strategy of the teams to which they were previously assigned?
Yeah, so I'll walk through a little bit of the thought process. So obviously we knew the number of seats we needed to fill on the implementation team. We didn't expect to fill all 200 seats with 200 existing employees. We knew some sort of expertise embedded within those teams would be needed, but we started with basically a call to action, a call for interest from our existing IT employees. So this is your opportunity if you'd like to be part of the project, if you would like to be on the project and maybe have an interest in a specific application that you do or don't work in today. Maybe you're not in applications, but you have an applications interest. And so that gave us our denominator of who was interested, who was ready for this journey. We obviously articulated what that would look like from a pace perspective of this is a 2 to 3 year effort. It really doesn't have any lulls in between on all of that. Once we knew that, we used the EPIC Sphinx assessment that they developed to really benchmark our staff against the skills that would be needed to be successful, at least in the implementation window during that pace. And from there, we were able to staff those positions to applications based on their complexity, based on what the person's talent, their internal performance reviews, et cetera, to build out our full project team. And yes, we did fully de-staff them from the moment they stepped on the plane to go to training at EPIC. We removed them from their day-to-day jobs, and EPIC training and certification became their full-time job from the get-go. What we did was then form a backfill, what we've called our foundation team, to keep operations running, to keep regulatory compliances. We very much believe that both sides of this equation are important. I think having done implementations before, if you're trying to do both, then the fires always win. You have to take care of the fires that are stopping operations, and then that distracts from the project. And if you try to do the project, then you can't manage the business, and the business will go out and find other IT solutions that come in and change your scope ultimately. So we've made a focus commitment of aligning but splitting the actual work efforts of the two teams. And it has been incredibly successful up to this date in terms of certification rate. And that's really where that came in, is we need people to get certified because we're making this commitment. We want 100% certified build team. At this point, we're hovering around the 98% mark. So we're nearly done with that goal of certification, and it only would have happened, it only could happen if we did that split.
Got it. So is it more difficult to backfill operations roles or to hire for EPIC implementation team members, integration members?
Yeah, that's an interesting it's an interesting question, and I think it honestly depends a little bit on the module or the application you're looking to fill. I think, for example, we had several of our analysts who focus a lot on our oncology, radiation oncology platforms. They moved over to the EPIC project team, and they left a void of knowledge on the RADONC space. And that is a very niche application space. There's really only two major vendors out there. We happen to have both of them in-house. And so to find an application analyst in the consulting world who could go in and fill that bucket on our operations team was challenging. I mean, we ultimately did, but that wasn't something that you can go post on LinkedIn and get 50 hits. On the other side of that, there's a very, very tight market for some of the ancillary consultants in the Epic world. So specifically thinking about Beaker, specifically Radiant, Cardiology, Cupid, those are a little bit more nuanced. And to get analysts in there that will commit for the time frame that we needed, as well as ideally have some familiarity with the third parties that we're using in those spaces, whether it's GE PACS or AGFA from a cardiology perspective. So I think it depended. In general, though, we were able to fill the void on both sides of the equation that was left. So either the delta we couldn't fill internally and the seats vacated.
So for CIOs listening to this particular episode, and let's say they're saying, okay, so our organization is thinking about moving to a single instance of Epic, and we have to learn how to staff up and recruit for this endeavor. It sounds like if they were to follow your recommendations, it might be, let's not start from scratch with either side. Let's pull some of our operations, get them up to speed on Epic. Then we can hire additional Epic people, but we won't be starting from zero. And we're not going to decimate our ops team. We'll take only a certain level. There will have to be proficiency with the Sphinx certification from Epic. But even so, we're not going to take everybody. We're going to leave a certain amount so that the base operations can get done. We're going to get a certain amount of people on the Epic side who are already current employees of Memorial Hermann, and they're going to get up to speed. And once you're at a certain like percentage of capacity on each side, then we'll try to hire up to fill the gaps so that we can kind of scale up over time. Is that an appropriate kind of summation of what you've put in operation?
Very much so. That's a great summation. I think you articulated the thoughtfulness around it too. I think our leaders in our IT team were very thoughtful around how do we do this, and understanding that there might be more people who want to be on the project team than can be on the project team. There's only so many seats for right now. Our ultimate vision, though, is that these teams come back together as one, and we bring certification along for everyone. And so that's the benefit here, too, is we'll have our own team training who went through the implementation training and bringing on board the rest of our team when we come back together, as opposed to a whole void of knowledge leaves and moves on to the next project out in space with another organization, and we have to fill a lot more holes moving forward.
Yeah, I think that your strategy allows for a conversion or a translation of institutional knowledge as opposed to leaving a void. I think a lot of organizations have a challenge of a lot of the expertise that's necessary for a certain role in one or two people's heads. And there are oftentimes many organizations are struggling to create processes that convert individual knowledge into institutional knowledge. And it sounds like your processes are designed to facilitate the creation of that institutional knowledge.
Agreed, 100%. And I'll give a real-time example. It's not just what I see coming when we transition and go live and move back to normal operations. It's actually happening real-time during the course of the project. So an actual example is a consultant on our Epic team that we had augmenting the team. They, due to medical reasons, had to withdraw from the project, and we have a slot. And certainly based on the Epic staffing guideline, we need to fill that spot. Well, we're now given this conversation around, can we hold on this spot for 3 months and bring someone else over internally to come join that team instead of this, we have to go fill it with a consultant. So we've created a where we have balance on both sides, and depending on the team and the need, how long are we okay with the build with existing resources? We're making decisions to go ahead and say, okay, you're coming over early from side A to B, and we're going to get you trained on Epic and you'll join now. And then that you know, essentially translates to another person internally knowing the Epic product. But also we're only doing that when we can manage the demand on our foundation side. So everyone embarking on this project hopes that your intake of new work decreases as you go on in the project. And so our vision would be move more people over as the work decreases for our run and maintain foundational team, as we branded it.
So I would like to, I'd like to pivot a bit. Let's go back to the Epic migration and away from human resources. I'd like to ask you about the technical challenges of migrating interfaces, archiving Cerner instances. You spoke about justifying the need for 45 external vendor applications where there's real PHIs that's living in those applications. How do you scale down those applications, consolidate, archive, make it available for future needs? What are some of the technical challenges associated with migrating to a single instance of Epic, and how have you been attacking those challenges?
Yeah, so one of the biggest shifts for our organization, just conceptually, is that today our Cerner platform is not our legal medical record. We have an independent document management system that receives all the feeds from Cerner and other subsystems. So in a sense, it is our legal medical record, our document management system. With that being said, Epic certainly has a different philosophy where Epic is the legal record. And so that sets the stage for a lot of our archiving and rationalization decisions on where data needs to go. So from a technical perspective, obviously everyone in operations certainly wants to convert all the data, get it into Epic so it looks and has everything you need. We've taken a measured approach with clinical input to really take the Epic recommendations on data conversion for X topic, whether it's lab, radiology, et cetera, adopt those best practices and focus on getting that data in within creating a context-sensitive launch to an archive solution. So our vision is we take our existing document management system, convert that to an online archive, and then have a patient context-sensitive launch from Epic to get to that archive. That being said, not everything is in that magical archive or document management system today. Some of those applications that are out there that serve a very specific purpose. So we've actually created what we're calling our sunset tracker. And what that does is that's helping us identify systems, invalidate systems with PHI, systems that currently go to our document management system, systems that go to our fair warning, because archiving our security logs for these systems that might go away, equally important to our privacy office. And so through this tracker effort, we've essentially been able to then scope out what do we need to move into that archive, marry up the MPI so that it can be accessed from Epic ultimately. So our vision is that we don't have 40 systems that are sitting in virtual machines that we have to power on, power off for the next 10 years in order to access archive data. We really have seen the archival as part of the project, because I think anyone who's done this before knows that if you just leave things running and say you'll decommission them, the next meaningful use or the next something comes along and you move forward. And then truly right now we have some Cerner classic systems from 2006 that we have to power on and off from time to time to get data out of. So that's not the future. We're trying to address that here and now. So from a technical perspective, it's really more around understanding the scope and identifying what resources are needed to get data out of these systems, and then balancing that with some of the SaaS platforms that might go away where we can't just tap into the database like we can with on-prem systems.
Right. Have you thought about consolidating the number of interfaces, and have you thought about any sort of cloud migration?
Yeah, so one of the big shifts for us, just from a platform perspective for Epic, is Epic is going to be hosting our instance of Epic. So we're currently a self-hosted Cerner customer today and now. So this is a big shift for our organization to say, we will be reliant on Epic and their hosting services to keep our operation up and running, and obviously partner with that. From an interface perspective, yes, our goal is certainly to rationalize the number of interfaces we have. Just thinking about our existing registration scheduling platforms that we have today, that's where the bulk of your messages come from. And so the fact that we are currently working with four or five of those different reg sketch systems, that's a huge amount of interface and message traffic that we all run through our engine and route and ultimately map to a single MPI. Well, you put Epic in the driver's seat of that, and you've just reduced the complexity of that equation significantly. So we do expect to see that decrease. We just finalized our interface scope, and so I don't have a full count to say, you know, X to Y. But when we decrease that number of interfaces, then the complexity, I think on the other end of this, we'll certainly have a more nimble approach to being able to add something on. I'd also just throw out there the native Epic integration from Epic to Epic instance. I mean, the Texas Medical Center area, the Houston Metro, is an Epic heavy part of the country. And so some of our interfaces are with other partners in the Texas Medical Center, specifically UT Health, who's also on Epic. The number is over 30 of interfaces that we have bidirectional exchanging data with them today. And the move of Memorial Hermann to Epic and having native care everywhere function will get rid of, I would guess, certainly 50 to 75% of those interfaces on the other side. So maintenance goes down of those interfaces. The quality goes up because it's Epic to Epic. And so because of our alignment with UT, especially at our Texas Medical Center campus, we see huge value just right there in some of our transitions of care and patient management.
Right. Okay. So we are approaching the end of this podcast episode. And one of the topics you wanted to cover was enhanced interoperability with aligned partners of care everywhere in UT. So I'm glad we got to that topic. You'd also mentioned, and I'll leave this to you because we are approaching the episode, if you care to address the parallel investment in Enterprise Imaging Foundation and how that's playing into this migration, or if you want to just kind of elaborate on any of the topics we've covered heretofore.
Yeah, I think I can give you a quick couple minutes on that, and then we can wrap. I think just to say, other organizations out there, I'm sure in a similar position. Over the years, we've acquired a number of different imaging solutions. Some of them are mainstream radiology solutions and cardiology solutions. Others are very niche PACS and systems for ophthalmology or for dental exams, endoscopy, et cetera. And one of our challenges we were faced with, really with the Epic implementation, was, are we going to integrate our three or four different viewers that we have today into Epic? And even though we might maintain those solutions, is having four viewers ideal? The answer is no. You don't need four different viewers where you can't see all the images in one view. So we have a fledgling VNA program that we were, an enterprise imaging program with the VNA that we just stood up. It was really only radiology centric. So in parallel to Epic, we're dipping our toes into bringing some of those other ology images together so that we can then take the step forward of, hey, with Epic, there's one single viewer for images from someone who's launching from Epic. I think it's a bit of a, I don't want to say scope creep, it's certainly planned, but you get further and further into the imaging space and there's more and more technical dependencies that open themselves up for upgrades and storage migrations, et cetera. So we're watching it very closely to make sure we do what we need, but ultimately have to come out of this with one viewer because we're choosing not to do the others. And so there's certainly some work to go there. I don't regret that decision right now. I think as a project team, we're comfortable with it, but we have a lot of work to do to balance out that effort in conjunction with Epic and some shared resources and some not.
Well, Oliver, I appreciate the conversation we've had today. We've covered a lot of ground from migrating from Cerner, an archive-based system with 45 different vendors, to the single instance of Epic, tracking the, have a sunset tracker to view how those things will be moving offline and keeping PHI secure. Just speaking about relocating staff within the organization and trying to handle the HR recruiting staffing model that is required and the extent to which it's going to be internal to the organization versus pulling in external consultants and trying to perpetuate a sense of institutional knowledge. And then we even spoke about partnering with external entities, both with Care Everywhere and then also, well, to a lesser extent, non-Epic players and interacting with those. So, and then we even got into enterprise imaging. So I think we covered a lot of ground. Thank you for your time today. And for our listeners, this has been Oliver Galecki, the Associate Vice President of EHR Implementation Program at Memorial Hermann Health System. Oliver, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jordan. Have a good day.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.